Welcome back to another edition of Thinking Like a Lawyer. I'm Joe Patrice.
Hi, Joe Patrice.
Hi.
I'm Catherine Urbino.
You are.
I am.
You are.
I am.
Nice
are
to meet
only...
you.
Oh, we aren't the only people here.
Look at that.
Yeah. Chris Williams
I'm also
is here.
Joe Patrice. Oh, I forget sometimes, you know.
Yeah. And we are all of Above the Law, and we're here on Thinking Like a Lawyer to give our weekly conversation about the big stories in the legal landscape of the week.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, that's not how we begin our show.
That's not usually how we start it.
We don't jump right in. You know,
no,
it's difficult to mainline legal news just like cold.
Jump right
you know,
in.
You've
got
to slowly get involved, and you can do that with a little bit of small talk.
Small talk.
Yes.
Now, speaking of mainlining legal news, what do y'all think Supreme Court justice clerks do when they're not at work? Like, how do you think that works?
One, they are at work. I mean, that's what they do.
It's a relatively short-term gig, so I think you kind of dedicate your all for that year or two.
Yeah.
I just imagine, like, it would be hard to, like, not lollygag. It would be the pressure to not lollygag because, you know, Clarence Thomas is down the hall has to be immense. But like, yeah. What's the...
I mean, these are very much, I think, go-getters by nature.
Right.
I don't think...
Oh, that sounds insufferable. You know, shout out to Sotomayor.
It's a small group of folks for a reason.
I know, but I just imagine like her being annoyed at some of her colleagues' clerks. Like, ugh, why'd Alito pick that guy, you know?
I mean, so I obviously, as far as their work schedule, I know from a previous episode of this show, our episode that we did as the immediate aftermath of Justice Ginsburg dying, you know, I interviewed Neil Katyal, and he was telling stories about how they would leave the office and Ginsburg's clerks would still be there till 3 or 4 in the morning. So that's the kind of life that they have. But that's that. Hey, what's up with you, Catherine?
Not too much. I think as regular listeners of our podcast know, in my spare time, I am a debate coach for a policy debate team. Mm-hmm. And I had an interesting experience. Yeah, we all have a policy debate background. And it was interesting because this weekend, one of my Above the Law articles played a role in a varsity debate round.
Yeah. I was judging said debate. And there was a claim made that the shadow docket has, and these shadow docket decisions that have grown in frequency has destroyed the Supreme Court's legitimacy, a claim that I pretty much agree in.
Yeah.
But as I heard it at rapid pace, that piece of evidence get read, I thought, that sounds a lot like something I might say. And and I was worried that it might be something that I had said, though it was not, but it was, in fact, Catherine Urbino evidence. So, yeah.
By the way, for those who aren't in the know, the reason Joe said at a rapid pace is because if you were to imagine an auctioneer's voice sped up by like 1.5,
right,
that's what debate rounds sound like.
Yeah.
Just like really fast talking, a lot of...
Yeah. So it went
that by. That was not an audio glitch. That was trying to replicate audio a policy debate. Yeah. And that's accurate.
We call it clutching.
Yeah. So it was going really quickly. I heard it and
I was like, took a look.
In fact, the article that this had come from, in fact, I'm even quoted in that article like 2 paragraphs after the evidence ends. So it was a claim that I think they were right about. As it turns out, at the end of the debate, both teams conceded that particular point was true.
Because it is.
So,
good news, you guys.
So good news, you did not, you were not the reason anybody lost the debate. So.
Or won it, but yeah.
Or won, yeah.
It was still kind of an interesting turn of events.
Yeah. No, so congratulations on becoming an author. I will say that at one point...
I mean, in fairness, I've been writing for a very long time.
Yeah, no, so there we go. So that was a fun weekend for you.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
One thing, oddly enough, I was at a tournament too. So
I got an
email invitation to judge at a mock trial.
Oh.
And that was interesting. It was cool because, you know, again, we all have debate backgrounds. I've never done mock trial, but I do have some experience in both rhetoric and bullshitting. You should see my writing above the law. So it was a nice experience to see totally different ways of assessing the round, like grading the round. And I messed up on like all the rounds I was in. So sorry to the debaters, but I apparently gave some good feedback. So
okay.
It's good to know that we all did a tournament in one way or another.
Yeah. I always make the analogy that mock trial is obviously a great way to practice and hone trial advocacy skills, whereas I feel as though policy debate is much more of appellate skills, to the extent that it's lots of research and distinguishing pieces of evidence. So so you went the trial side and we were at the more appellate side argument. Anyway, that seems like enough small talk for now.
Small talk.
All right, so let's get into the topics
at
hand.
Let's do it.
Yeah, so I think the biggest story of the week last week was a story in three acts that exploded over the course of 3 days. There was a it came to light over the previous weekend, and then accelerated Monday through Wednesday. A attorney in Ohio had gotten a female attorney in Ohio had gotten an email from a not partner but senior lawyer at a law firm. They don't have the didn't have the title partner per se, but functioning as a partner. Got a text from that person after they announced that they were lateraling. That was, well, let's say harsh.
It was a text message, right?
Yeah. It was a text message blaming the woman for leaving for another job, saying that she had been sitting on her ass. And by sitting on her ass, he meant she was on maternity leave.
Yikes.
So she had taken her maternity leave and then during that time,
I mean, that's really a wildly inappropriate way to refer to maternity leave, besides which it's a benefit that you've already accrued by working there, and using it does not in any way implicate your ability or your desire to stay any longer than you have to.
Well, that's a really good point. And I think one that was coming out of this, one of the most important points, which is maternity leave is not something that you have to pay back. It is a benefit you've already earned.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't take maternity leave and then owe the firm more time. You have already put in your time to get that maternity leave, so you can do whatever you want with it.
For those that didn't read the article, the text message reads like one of those hypos you can tell the employment law professor was having fun with while they crafted it. it was so cartoonish of a violation of not only law, but common decency, where you're like, oh, this is just exaggerated to test if issue spotting is a thing. Like, no lawyer would actually do this.
Yeah, I guess at this point
here we are.
At this point, we should share exactly what was said. What was said in this text is, I had suspicions you were interviewing 2 months ago, and I told Steven then to ask you about it. I also told him to cut you loose at that time if confirmed. He was too nice of a guy to do so. What you did, collecting salary from the firm while sitting on your ass, except to find time to interview for another job, says everything one needs to know about your character. Karma's a bitch. Rest assured, regarding anyone who inquires, they will hear the truth from me about what a soulless and morally bankrupt person you are.
Wow.
Yeah. So this came from senior lawyer John Delano, who also represents the city of Cleveland in a lot of matters. He's a labor attorney. Guess which side?
The thing that really gets me is, okay, sure, even a management side labor attorney really ought to know better.
Right.
You know, it's not like you're doing tax law where these issues are never come across your desk. You know, this is something you regularly deal in. What would happen if you were defending management and you saw a copy of that in discovery? You wouldn't be pleased with your client. You wouldn't be like, oh, this is great news for us.
Well,
certainly he knew better.
While I was reading it, Chris flagged issue one. And I think let's go back to that issue one, which was the part of the put aside everything else, which is also bad. The part of the text, assuming it's true, where he says he advocated that the firm cut the woman loose if she was in fact interviewing while on maternity leave, is admitting that you had thought at some point it had crossed your mind of making a retaliatory firing of somebody while on their maternity leave. Like, once that happens, how does this go forward? And that really became the second part of this act, which is the firm itself, the managing partner, the aforementioned Stephen, this is Zash and Rich, the aforementioned Stephen in that text puts out a statement saying, you know, this was unacceptable and all, but it was done in the heat of the moment, and we're going to try to do better and make some corrective actions. This went over poorly, as it did not include, say, an apology for this, and seemed to downplay the whole thing as a heat of the moment issue. Which
it was clearly just an attempt to get rid of the hot
right.
glare of the media, and the local community, legal community, was really, really bearing down quite a bit on the firm, you know, during the heat of this,
yeah.
the height of this.
Because the idea that this was heat of the moment, which when it's a voicemail, maybe you can get away with. But with a text, somebody had to sit there, type it out, edit it,
whatever. It's a lot of thumb time.
But also, this goes back to the flagged issue. If that was heat of the moment, maybe you could get away with it. But when you're admitting that there was a prior conversation in which you had suggested to management firing a retaliatory firing, this becomes more moments. A lot more moments.
I also think it's important to think about what this means for what constitutes heat. Because, like, right. when I generally think of heat at the moment, I think of, oh my God, I walk in, I find my wife cheating on me with my best friend, and my mom's recording it saying, yeah, cheat on my son. Like, that's mm-hmm. a clear heat of the moment scenario. But he was like, oh my God, not only is she pregnant, but she's looking for a job elsewhere. Like, heat is so different now.
Anyway, so that happened. Not great. So that statement comes out. It does not go over well. Later in the evening, the firm announces that the offending partner is no longer with the firm. It's not.
Ah, there we go. There are the consequences of my own actions.
And an apology and all that. It seems like it was finally a response to what had happened. Now, that said, this is still not a great place for anyone to be. Obviously, you're in a situation where you need to do some training, have some concrete steps. We don't know necessarily what those are. Obviously, a situation where this happens is bad enough reflection on the culture, but a situation in which you had been assuming this person was, you know, making this statement against their interests accurately, you're in a situation where you, as a manager, have heard that some senior person wants to make a retaliatory firing. That should be a red flag that you respond to, and it's a sign of a broken culture, sort of, if that isn't something that triggers, oh, wait a minute, I need to do something about this. Hopefully, this will be a light bulb moment where the firm can move forward and learn those sorts of lessons, you know? I will say a lovely coda to this story is the Ohio State Bar put out a statement about it and specifically thanked me for helping to bring this to their attention. So that was lovely. You know, we make a lot of jokes in this job. It's nice when sometimes we have done something serious. So that was nice. Generate quality briefs, memos, and redlines in minutes with Callidus AI. You enter the case's facts, then Callidus suggests bodies of law, statutes, and precedents. You tell it if those are relevant, and Callidus generates a well-cited, well-formatted document. You can trust what went into it because you put it there. Be exceptionally productive with better outcomes using Legal's most advanced AI platform. Just 3 minutes from registration to results. Get $90 off your first 2 months. Use promo code Joe at CallidusAI.com. That's CallidusAI.com.
Hey, Gee, what's up?
Just having some lunch, Conrad.
Hey, Gee, do you see that billboard out there?
Oh, you mean that guy out there in the gray suit?
Yeah, the gray suit guy.
Order up. There's all those beautiful, rich, leather-bound books in the background.
That is exactly the one. That's J.D. McGuffin at law. He'll fight for you!
I bet you he has got so many years of experience.
Like decades and decades. And I bet, Gee, I bet he even went to a law school.
Are you a lawyer? Do you suffer from dull marketing and a lack of positioning in a crowded legal marketplace? Sit down with Gee and Conrad for Lunch Hour Legal Marketing on the Legal Talk Network, available wherever podcasts are found.
All right, we're back. What do we want to talk about next?
Dealer's choice, friend.
All right, so the other issue that was big last week is obviously a special counsel has been appointed to investigate the Joe Biden classified documents issue.
Right.
Yeah, if you've been tracking, obviously you're aware of the special counsel looking into Trump's top secret documents that he was holding in a pool locker at Mar-a-Lago, apparently. There has now been a few documents found at the office that of the Biden Center at Penn, which is, you know, a center that he had set up. The part of his time as vice president, he had received classified documents. Some of them are found among the effects that were kept in that office. This has been reported to the government that they found these classified documents. They found a few more after that. Ultimately, Merrick Garland appointed a special counsel to look into this issue, specifically Robert Hur, you know, speaking of Supreme Court clerks, a former one, who is and a former Trump era U.S. attorney who is going to be looking into this. So the first impulse everybody had was see, Biden did the same thing Trump did. This has been largely the argument of the Trump administration hangers-ons.
So Biden lied about having...
Well, see, that's kind of the issue, isn't it?
Oh.
Yeah. So they are similar to the extent that both of them had classified documents in places they shouldn't have been. That's where that...
Everything
after that juncture is where things start to separate. I actually saw one of the various right-wing legal tweeters out there had tweeted something about how I can't believe they were just letting the Bidens say, oh, we're looking on our own to find documents and we'll get back to you. And I'm like, that is exactly what they did with Trump, which is the whole problem for him, because he then came back and had his lawyers aver to the federal government, we've looked and found everything. And they hadn't. Because, see, the lying is the part that makes this a problem.
Wait, are you implying, like, the facts of the case make a difference?
Yeah, you know, the facts seem to make a difference. Actually, the national security lawyer, Mark Zaid, who is kind of the expert in this, this is actually the kind of stuff he does all the time, he tweeted out as soon as the story broke about how this happens constantly in his life. Like, government officials misplace classified documents all the time, which is somewhat scary, but also a reflection of how we probably overclassify things. But whatever it is, he says, look, it happens all the time, and it's almost always handled with some administrative, non-serious slap on the wrist, because people, when they find out that they've done this wrong, immediately turn around and go, hey, our bad, handle this for us. And he's like, that's the difference. It's if you had acted, and he's like, and Trump would be facing exactly the same non-consequential slap on the wrist had it not been for the lying about the documents and forcing the government to execute a warrant to get them.
Right. Right. And then proceeding to attack the FBI.
Right.
That executed the warrant.
Well, that's the weird thing about this special counsel idea, because Republicans started calling for a special counsel as soon as the story broke. You know, Lindsey Graham's on TV. Everyone's going on TV and saying there should be a special counsel. If there's one against Trump, there definitely has to be one here. And this was a poor strategic decision, I think.
Yeah. I think that they must have assumed, well, we would never respond in kind. So I assume the Democrats won't.
I guess. But the Democrats did appointed a special counsel. And while that is inevitably annoying that it escalates what should be a fairly routine and unimportant matter to a higher level, this really burns Trump in my mind. Like, because now the argument that this was some partisan witch hunt really falls apart when the same Democrats are like, yeah, and we appointed another special counsel, indeed a Republican lawyer, to look into what Biden did here.
I mean, this implies a lot of logic, Joe.
Yeah.
Consistency isn't really a major point here.
That's a hallmark of the modern conservative movement.
Yeah. Well, that's fair. But see, this is the problem. I understand that there will always be people who are dyed-in-the-wool MAGA folks who are not going to care one way or the other about this. That's fine, granted. But there is some dwindling set of moderate, independent folks who are out there who might have been persuadable that the Trump investigation was a witch hunt before this happened. And now what they're going to see is, oh yeah, everybody got treated the same.
I feel like whenever people talk about these like unspecified far right potentially leaning moderates. It sounds to me the same way people talk about the like the middle class. I'm like, citation needed. Like, who are these people? Do they have names? Do they have addresses we could send mail to? Like, I mean,
well, that's the thing. We know they exist. They are a very small group. They're far smaller than people like to pretend. But we know they exist because we see elections in some areas go different ways between a couple of years.
Sure, that like there's a some plus pop- Trump district.
Yeah.
When, you know, during the midterms and elected Democratic senator.
Right. So there's some population that's doing this. Now, I don't know who these people are, and I think they may be crazy, but they exist, right? So
that would explain why at all the signs at the rallies, they have that silent majority sign. The people with the silent majority sign are the people that can be swayed.
Anyway, so this seems like a really bad idea, bad strategic turn for the Trump world. Obviously, we'll see how this all plays out, but it doesn't look good. And it is one of those careful what you wish for sorts of moments, I think, for them. They would have been much better off just not calling for a special special counsel and instead saying, see, this proves that everyone does it. Don't worry about it or something like
right.
that. But now they've just given a rubber stamp to the idea that this is that what special counsel do is legitimate, which is going to become a problem for them, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I do think your sort of hope for what happens at the end of this falls apart when there are two different recommendations by the different special counsel, because there are differences in fact, as we've discussed.
Sure.
And I think that, well, it's not the same because it was what I mean, the right jumps on.
Yeah. True. But it's going to look a little bit better coming from Republican
for
lawyer,
sure.
I think. But alas. So. With all I said this was the special counsel is a former Supreme Court clerk, also an appellate clerk for Alex Kaczynski, one of Trump's lawyers. So there's that too.
Oh,
yeah, and you know there's other reasons why Alex Kaczynski's an issue.
Yeah, I've written a lot about Judge Kaczynski.
Yeah. All right, so now we're back.
Mm-hmm. We're back with some Elon Musk news, as I recall.
All right. You want to talk about that?
I mean, he has been great for traffic at above the line. I'll tell you that. As some of you may recall, Elon Musk likes to hold grudges.
Yes.
One of the people or firms specifically that he has talked about on Twitter is Perkins Coie, saying that no one should use them as a firm because of Michael Sussman, a partner at the firm who was exonerated after a trial he was accused of lying to the FBI because he spoke to the FBI but didn't reveal at the time that he also had Hillary Clinton as a client, and whatever, he was found not guilty after a trial. But because of this, Elon went on a bit of a rant saying that no one should use Perkins Coie until they apologize for trying to sway elections.
And then, you know, he hired Perkins Coie.
Yeah, yeah. He turned around and hired Perkins
Coie.
Well,
he didn't. The firm, the company did.
Twitter did.
Yes.
Yes. But again, because he has decimated the legal department, as we've covered extensively in the pages of Above the Law, somehow the firm, which had previously worked for Twitter before Elon Musk blew up at the firm on Twitter, but had previously represented them, entered an appearance defending the company against some allegations. And when asked about, hey, why that happened, or, you know, have you forgiven the firm? Elon was just like, oh, it was done in error.
Mm. One of the things that gets me about like talking about how clearly Elon has decimated the legal team. Yes, but folks at Twitter are selling chairs. Like, I think there was one point that they were like, they didn't have toilet paper in the office. Like, he is decimating everything. Like, you got to respect.
Yeah, he's also not paying his bills in order to try make it a renegotiation tactic with some vendors. There's lots of bad stuff going on.
Like, his level of failure is mythological. Like, if there was a if there was a reverse Midas touch, it would be the head of Tesla.
Yeah, the not paying bills part, obviously he's trying to renegotiate commercial leases.
And he's fucking rich. That's the thing.
Not so much anymore. But
again, reverse Midas.
He's still doing okay, but he's trying to do that with the company fine. That is a tactic one could employ. It is, you know, not going to work in most times. I guess his theory is that the commercial real estate market is in trouble with lots of hybrid and work from home situations. But, you know, in San Francisco, there's going to be a home for that office. They're going to find a tenant. So there, I don't understand what leverage he thinks he has here. I don't think he understands how leverage works in any way, as far as I can tell.
It's like he's playing 5D chess in a checkers game.
Yeah, it's so unreal. You know, and he's this is why you have lawyers, kids. What really gets me is all of these cuts kind of feel like when a private equity organization buys an entity, then guts it and tries to flip it, saying, look at profitability's up, not because they've actually done anything,
but because
other
they
than
cut
all the headcount. But there's no indication he's intending to sell, which means that none of this makes any sense. Just
baffling,
wild.
But very entertaining to watch.
It is. Well, yeah, I mean, we got a little bit of extra time, I suppose. I may as well talk. Marjorie Taylor Greene, R from Crazy Town. she got a sternly worded letter from a lawyer, Howard E. King, who represents Dr. Dre. And, you know, she had some videos up celebrating Kevin McCarthy becoming speaker and by extension, her role in that using some Dre songs. And, that did not go over well with the Dre team.
No, it didn't.
Specifically, the letter reads, one might expect that as a member of Congress, you would have a passing familiarity with the laws of our country. It's possible, though, that laws governing intellectual property are a little too arcane and insufficiently populist for you to really have spent much time on.
I don't know if you'll understand it, but that is a burn.
We're writing because we think an actual lawmaker should be making laws, not breaking laws, especially those embodied in the Constitution by the Founding Fathers.
Boom.
Yeah. Brutal diss track coming from the Dre lawyers.
Much appreciated.
Also, like another one of my favorite hot takes that I think is just spot on in the same way that civil procedure is just spicy con law. So is IP.
Yeah, no, as I point out, she really should have known better about this. I mean,
she's not the first politician who's gotten in trouble for playing a song that did not previously get approval by the artist.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, this is a thing that happens.
I mean, when you forget about Dre.
Well,
you don't.
Yeah, I mean, but she
forgot about IP.
She did not forget about Dre. She forgot about
she forgot
copyright
about IP,
act.
Yeah.
But maybe I was trying to think of how she might have justified this, and I was wondering if she thought that Dr. Dre was dead and locked in a basement.
Oh.
That was
but
good.
See, that wouldn't even cover her because copyright extends another 70 years after the death of the author, and that's only been 23 since that album came
out. Has it been 23 years?
It has been 23 years
that
since that
Eminem.
That
actually makes me feel worse than anything else that we've
talked about
today.
You're welcome.
The good thing about this is it really is a gift that keeps on giving, so you can probably also talk about the developments of this legal scenario on the next episode.
That's pretty much everything.
It's a
that's
pretty
going
busy
on,
week.
Isn't it? Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope you're listening to the Above the Law, Thinking Like a Lawyer podcast.
I mean, if they weren't, they wouldn't hear this anyway.
Right. But I hope that you're also subscribed so that you always get
the episodes. So you get it every week.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It comes right to your phone. You don't have to, have to worry about, what was there? Was there a thing I wanted to do?
Yeah,
it just automatically comes to your phone.
No, that's fair. You can do that. And actually, you can make sure and help out that other people get it recommended to their phone if you left a review.
Right. And stars, obviously, are great, but written reviews are extra special.
Exactly.
Oh, what makes them so special?
It helps us move up the algorithm and helps other people find us as a legal podcast.
Oh, those damn algorithms.
They're dictating our life. It's good times.
Anyway, you know, if people wanted to hear more from us,
you can always read us at AboveTheLaw.com.
That's true. That's true. You could. Mm-hmm. But that's more of a reading thing. I was saying if they wanted to hear more from us.
Yes, there is the Jabot podcast that I'm the host of.
Oh, there you go.
And you are on some sort of legal tech roundtable.
I am on the Legal Tech Week Journalist Roundtable every week, which is.
And while we don't mention this, we also have a large catalog of episodes from years going back. So if you want to hear us talk about things from like 2019, would that be accurate?
This has been going on. The old episodes with Ellie Mistal and I go back a long, long way, probably 2013 or so.
Damn, so there's a lot of content y'all can catch up on. And
there is.
Share,
we actually already cited one. We cited one in this episode.
That's right.
I brought up the RBG episode. Anyway, so you can check out the other shows from the Legal Talk Network that we're not
catch
on
up on
too,
the lore. So. You're not a good constitutional scholar if you don't know the lore.
That's true. Okay, and you can read Above the Law. You can follow it. We'll talk about Twitter for now because it's still the standard at this
but
point.
It's at ATL blog if you want to follow the ATL account. Me personally, I'm at Catherine1, the numeral 1. Joe's at Joseph Patrice, and Chris is at Rights for Rent.
Right.
And we do not have a Be Real, because that wouldn't make sense, but we do have an Instagram, ATL blog.
I think the reason we don't have a Be Real is literally no one has ever heard of that until you started talking about it. But that's
because
the thing with all
the
these
young
alternatives.
Do.
See,
it's like Alpha Generation shit. They haven't gone to law school yet. Give us some time.
Yeah. I don't even know as though that's true. But anyway, moving along, we have all of those options for you to keep up with us. We also have, Insta and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you can find.
Other than that, have a great week.
I think that's right.
Peace out.
See you next one.
If you're a lawyer running a solo or small firm and you're looking for other lawyers to talk through issues you're currently facing in your practice, join the Unbillable Hours Community Roundtable, a free virtual event on the third Thursday of every month. Lawyers from all over the country come together and meet with me, lawyer and law firm management consultant Christopher T. Anderson, to discuss best practices on topics such as marketing, client acquisition, hiring and firing, and time management. The conversation is free to join, but requires a simple reservation. The link to RSVP can be found on the Unbillable Hour page at LegalTalkNetwork.com. We'll see you there.